I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wilford sets off upfield. He wants a speedster to run onto it. He might be the quickest. Oh, he kicks. He kicks ahead. And now Corey Oates will come. Oh, Oates with the one-handed pickup. How about that? Asako in behind them. He's confused. He didn't know whether to kick or whether to run. He takes the runner option. Jermaine Asako will score. Straight around them, down the wing, comes back inside. This is electric. This is Jimmy the Jet, and he's absolute best.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Hello, Broncos fans, and welcome to this week's episode of Broncos Weekly. As always, I'm Mitch, and not as always, we're joined on the line by our good friend Benny. How you doing, Benny?
Very well, thank you, mate. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. You're almost I would say, what are you? You're like in the rotation with Simo now. It's not 50-50, but it's
not.
Like, we
it's
can't decide. Yeah, it is. It's just like the whole Broncos halfback thing. We don't know who the first choice one is at this point. We'll just keep shuffling.
Hey, mate, you shuffle the deck chairs, you land on me every now and then. It's fine.
We will. But essentially, it's not that Simo couldn't podcast. It's more Benny wanted to, and it's always good for you guys to hear a different voice who can complain in a different way than me and Simo can about different issues with the club currently.
Well, that's so exactly right. I mean, like, complaining is about the Broncos, not something that I enjoy doing, but you know, it's as fans of the team for the last 30 years, I think we have a bit of a right to have a few grievances with the club and how it's currently going.
Yeah, it is. So we haven't asked for questions. We'll just get through lots ourselves. We're going to start though. We'll talk about last week's game because probably, I know we've had some embarrassing losses, and it wasn't the most embarrassing loss of the last 2 years, but it was embarrassing for me in the sense of, like, it was such a winnable game and they turned up like that. And you just lose faith in a lot of those players ever being something for this club when that's what we get after one win.
Yeah, it was a game, and I've been speaking to my brothers about it. It's like, that was almost the one that broke the camel's back for me this year. Like, we've been bad at times, we've been good at times, but we've had a win and then we had a bye, and then we dish this up against a team that has been absolutely awful for the past 4 to 6 weeks, conceding tries at will. Mm-hmm. And we just didn't show up. It was fucking embarrassing.
Yeah, it's like, you look at this, like, I penciled that game in from like round 7 or 8, for God's sake. When the Tigers were looking okay, I penciled it in. We can probably win that Sharks game and maybe this one and start feeling okay about some of the later season games.
Yeah, that was the stage where we could have probably won 3 of our next 4 type.
Yeah, it was.
Part of the draw.
And then the Tigers started playing like they did, and we went into the game favourites, for Christ's sake. It's the first time we've been favourites against a non-Bulldogs team in like 2 years. You know, he went into the game favourites. And the worst thing for me, mate, is that it looked like they thought they were going to win, like turned up to win. Like, yeah. They look like they read their own press after one win.
Yeah.
And that the bye round has felved everything. And yeah, just again went to not respecting possession anymore. We have such an issue with respecting the ball and earning victories. And they refused to, if all they did was just complete their sets at like 75%. And give away maybe 2 or 3 less penalties, they win. But they can't not shoot themselves in the foot.
No, and this all comes back to our spine. Like, Tessie, while he's doing great, is 6 games into his fullback career. Brody Croft is a 50-game player who still has absolutely no idea what he's doing on the field, has no attacking influence on the game at all, and is just literally out there taking up a jersey number. Tyson Gamble is not the most talented player in the world, but he will at least try. He put in some decent kicks. Tyson's biggest problem is every now and then on the fifth tackle, he'll decide to run it.
He's got it.
40 yeah. out.
Where and... he hasn't got any pace. I don't know if he's ever actually beaten someone doing that.
No, I'm like, guy, just keep kicking to the corner, dude. Like, that's all you need to do. You did that very well for 80% of the game. It's just every now and then he just has that little fade, which is a fade you can deal with if you've got a halfback that can actually play the game properly.
Yeah, and then or Turpin, a team that can defend more than one set in a row.
Exactly. And then Turpin, you know, bless him. He's a, you know, he tries his ass off every single week, especially in defense, just doesn't have any, you know, creative nous out of hooker. So we're doing what we're doing at the moment with a spine that is almost completely useless.
I mean, it's the worst in the league.
It is. By some margin, I think.
Like, I know people would say the Bulldogs, and I know it, but really, I think ours is probably still worse because, like, Jack Avarillo goes okay. I honestly think he'd probably be the best player in our spine if he was in our spine.
Yeah.
And I think if he's fit, Gerald Marshall-King is actually better than Turpin. I wouldn't think I would have said that a few years ago, but he actually creates some things. Anyway, if we're not the worst, we're the second worst spine in the league.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Tessie has potential. I give him a free pass. He hasn't been making mistakes. He's been doing his best.
And Tessie can't do anything unless at least one or two of those other spine members do something before he does.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, that's what a fullback does. A fullback doesn't just create off his own back in a side like ours. He needs either the hooker to create out of dummy half or the half or 5'8" to be able to give him something playing out the back of some shape. And he just can't get that. Like, I mean, we've seen him do a couple of selfish tries already this year. Like, he's done a great job scoring some tries literally off his own attacking spark, but he needs more than that to be able to, you know, actually fulfill some of the talent that he's got.
Yeah, and what you said is 100% correct, that even when James Tedesco was in that bad Tigers side, his last year was so poor there, people were trying to act like he wasn't a loss to go to the Roosters, like he wasn't a big loss. But it's all that changed was that he was in a better team than the year after. He looked like a world beater. He was the exact same player that whole time. And yeah, Tessie, well, you can't change the tide for the team from fullback. You just can't.
No.
But it feels like when you've got Croft at 7, I feel like he really impacts Turpin at 9 because like Turpin is a good defensive 9, works his ass off, hasn't got an attacking creative bone in his body. But it feels like every time Croft's 7, Turpin thinks he has to create and he just does things like when he picks the ball and runs 3 or 4 meters out of dummy half with nothing.
Yeah.
On his mind.
It's but like, he does sort of have to create because Croft can't. Like, and that's the thing. When you've got someone who's not an attacking spark like Turpin, looking at your halfback who's even less of an attacking threat like Croft, I mean, something's going to give. And Turpin, bless him, while he does try his best, it's just not a combo that can work for us going forward. Like, give me 30-year-old Albert Kelly over Croft every single day of the week. I mean, I know he's been injured, so there's not much we can do, but... I mean, the quicker we never see Croft in a Bronx jersey, the better.
Yeah, it hurt me a little when I saw the team list. After the exact same day they came out that Kelly's available for selection, I thought they were throwing the bunny up that he's going to be back in the 7. But and I just hate that they've landed on a common sense decision. They've landed on, we don't want to keep shuffling the team. They landed on it, though, with Croft at the 7. Yeah, it's like they're not with Kelly. I was okay with that because Kelly had his faults. He was making mistakes, but he was creating points.
Yeah, he was.
And he was doing things like supporting other ball runners, actually trying to create things. Whereas, as we know, Brody's been a handicap, a handbrake on the attack for years, but we've just seen what he did to the left edge of the defense. Like, it's no coincidence where you had like the worst ever right edge defensively when he was on the right, and then he moves to the left, and all of a sudden teams are just going that way on us.
Yeah.
And like, he just... play him and Glenn did not communicate like once that entire game. They both played narrow, and there was so many moments in that game when I watched the replay that you've got guys like Gamble from the left hand side, right hand side, losing his mind, screaming at them to spread a number up or whatever, and just nothing happening on the left hand side. All those guys were playing in a silo, and the Tigers gutted us.
And that's the worst thing about that is to people that will just watch the game on the weekend and not pay too much attention, you know, to how things are actually going. they'll look at Herbie and they'll look at Oates on the wing and be like, oh, you guys have completely blown it. It's like, no, the inside defenders are leaving these guys posted. Like, there's no decision that they can make. They have to make a decision, which is clearly the wrong one because of the work of their inside guys. Like, you know, we've seen those still shots of exactly where Glenn and Croft were defending. And Herbie, they just stand no chance out there with guys who are so bad laterally already being so tight to the ruck that, you know, even a Tigers attack that has been pretty bad, you know, other than, say, Dewey, just absolutely tore them to shreds, like whenever they pretty much wanted.
Yeah, and that first try, for example, it's when they offloaded, Stefano offloaded in the middle, it went right and then went back into Luciano Leilua. That looked really simple.
Yeah.
On the first look, again, you watch it first, you're just like, oh, they've outnumbered us. You know, an offload, crossover stretch and whatever, it just happens. When you rewatch that, you find that the tackle, the guy on the last play the ball, Alex Glenn is in the tackle. And then he's the second marker who wasn't going right. He was supposed to go back left and get back into the line. Stefano gets hit really close to the line. And then Glenn lazily walks over because it is the lazy call. It's harder to run back to the goal line. It's easier to be the fourth man into a tackle.
Oh,
he walks over to Stefano's tackle and doesn't wrap his arm and he offloads. And all of a sudden we've got three on the left defending like six Tigers.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's a genius call. So when they isolate Croft, there was huge, they didn't blame Croft for that one. It's like Glenn made the poor call. But some of the other ones, mate, they just didn't communicate. And we had occasions, Tessie doing his best to vocalize from what I saw behind the ruck, pointing to the retreating, one of the retreating forwards to go left, you know, telling the markers they're going left. And then the left-hand side just doesn't talk.
Yeah,
and
just stationary.
It does happen sometimes. It happens in games and it gets away from you. But that happened with a 40-game halfback or 50-game halfback and with our captain.
Yeah, who's nearly a 300-gamer.
And if Alex Glenn right now can't at least stand in the right position, I mean, what are we doing? And
what are we doing?
I know he's not getting dropped this year, but... yeah, whatever. It's just disappointing watching that. And the most disappointing thing of all of it, as you said, mate, the Tigers had no interest at all in defending. They had no interest in defending at all. Anytime we had the ball, we made 10 metres a run in this game.
Yeah.
After we scored that first try, we made it to their goal line the set after that. We never do that.
Yeah.
Ever.
We drop it.
We're not Manly. We're not Penrith. We're not the Storm. Those teams. We always struggle to make 40 metres out of our own half. We made it to their goal line. Anytime we had the ball, we motored downfield, but we just couldn't do the basic thing of like hold the ball, get to last kick, and then don't put pressure on yourselves. We couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's the disappointing thing is it was, Toyota Cup standard where it's just we can't seem to, and we haven't been able to do this for a while, we can't seem to just, it's not even just icing a game, it's putting yourself in a position where you can ice a game.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even let ourselves get to that position where we're like, all right, we're six ahead. There's 10 to go. Let's knuckle down and just win it outright from here. We get ahead and then someone gets too confident. They make an error and then it unravels from there. Yeah. Like, you know, Jermaine was great for 35 minutes. He missed a penalty shot from about 2 meters wide of the upright. And from that miss, he kicks it out on the full. He drops it. He gets taken into touch. He goes up for a bomb, drops it, doesn't go up for the next one. Mm-hmm. He gets out jumped. They score. Like, is there a player in the competition at the moment that as soon as one thing happens to him, the rest of the game is a complete write off?
And I've had the patience of a saint with Jermaine Asako.
Oh, me too. I love the man. I think there is a footballer in there, but this thing
he's
where
not 20 anymore, mate.
No, you can't just make one mistake and have your whole game unravel from there. Like, you just can't do it.
Yeah, and the kickoffs going dead has been a constant problem for him. For a dude that is one of the best goal kickers in the league, you'd think he'd understand by now how to kick the ball. I honestly think he shouldn't be taking kickoffs. I'd rather, remember for a while there, even like Matt Gillette did it. It ain't hard to kick off a tee. I'd rather kick him 10 metres short at this point.
But the thing is, with what he's doing, he's kicking the belly of the ball. So he's not kicking the ball as if he's kicking for goal. If he's kicking the ball like he's kicking for goal and kicking the point of it, I guarantee you that ball is not going dead.
It's not.
When you're kicking on the belly of the ball, you get so much more chance of just getting an absolute flyer off it. And he's doing that. Like, kick it high if you're going to do that. Don't just kick it hard and long.
Yeah, and he has all the skills in the world, as you said, mate. Like, but I have zero faith in him in those moments. Like, I have no faith in him putting a kick off in the field of play after we concede two tries. And things too, like, he has a great drop kick on him. But when we ever actually need a short drop out or a short kickoff, he is never hitting it.
No.
Ever. And he could probably do it at training. He'll probably hit you 20 straight perfect short dropouts.
Yeah.
And there's some guys in this team that, like, I know we can always talk about coaching and whatever, and I'm not going to set a bar. Like, not everyone can be Bellamy, Robinson, and Bennett, okay? There are some guys in this team that I'm at this point that I don't know what coach... The majority coach can get out of those guys, you know, bags of talent that just they've been through a number of regimes and they still can't get really basic things right. And Jermaine's one of them. Tom Flegler's the other for me. Like, he was kind of good in Origin.
And yeah, he was fine.
He's like, kind of good moments.
But... He got belted a lot, but, like, you know, at least he sort of got stuck in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that was an accident anyway, him being actually called into the team. But yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, there is coaches that can get certain things out of players. I mean, Bellamy couldn't get anything out of Croft, and Seibold thought he could, which is, I mean. Yeah,
we still think we can or whatever. I mean, I don't rate Kyle Flanagan, for example, but it's bizarre that, like, Brody Croft is still starting games and he's not. Yeah. Flanagan at least doesn't fuck up all the time. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like, Flegler in this game, he started pretty well when he came on the field, and then the thing he does almost every week, just one dumb mistake, and it always costs us six. And that penalty he gave away, there's penalties in rugby league. They're not created equal. And that's why the penalty counts never actually matter. But we seem to give away dumb penalties all the time, or the wrong penalties. And I'm shocked whenever we do, like, a good penalty or a good deliberate one.
Yeah.
Like, I gave a dumb one away in this game, like being the fourth guy in and hitting someone high.
I know. That was
the fourth tackle.
Like, intent, I understand, because we had such a good set.
Yes.
It was a great set up until that point. I think they were 18 meters off their line on the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even necessarily a high shot as such. Like, it was high contact, obviously, but you can't put yourself in that position to give away that penalty at that part of the, like, at that stage of the game. Like, we defend that set and they're kicking from 25 out. Again, we're right on their try line in four tackles.
Yeah.
And it's just something that kills us all the fucking time. And I'm sick of, like, watching it.
So am I, mate.
Honestly, I can't handle it because it's so dumb.
We have
the dumbest football team in the competition.
Yeah, and you can get by, mate. Like, when you watch your team, they put in, they compete, they do their best, and you lose. It happens.
Yeah, happy. I'm happy. When I say I'm happy, I'm obviously never happy to lose, but when teams say they've had a good loss, I don't think there's ever a good loss. Mm. There's honourable losses where you can cop getting beaten by a better team. But then there's losses like this where you want to slit your throat.
Yeah, like the Eels game and the Panthers game. You know what? Well played, fellas.
Yeah.
This game was like, what the hell is wrong with all of you? Everyone, you forgot how to play the sport again. And it's not that young of a team anymore. It just isn't. Like,
no, the inexperience is not an excuse for this, because the guys that we have playing in certain positions are all old enough to know better.
Yeah, like,
and, like, for
Jermaine's
example,
25, for Christ's sake. You know?
Like, Jermaine, okay, from the wing, but you watch Croft and you cut up tape and that sort of thing. How many times defensively has he sprinted out past everyone?
For no reason.
For no reason, only to leave a bit of a broken line, then retreat. So not only does he sprint out, he breaks the line there. He has to, his outside men, Herbie, winger, have to come in because he's sprinted out a little bit. Then he retreats, which means the outside guys are already in tighter than they need to be. And all it does is create confusion amongst four defenders, because he's trying to do his own thing. He's trying to get line speed, but line speed doesn't work if it's one guy.
It doesn't. And
not even making a tackle.
And the worst thing of that for that whole game was the one he finally committed to, he forced a bad kick from Adam Dewey, and then the other guys all fucked it up.
Yeah.
Like, that's another small thing from us, is this, why does this happen, as you mentioned, the dumb team? this happens to us all the time, that the most basic thing of like putting the ball on the ground in the in goal or batting it dead eludes us. Yeah. And that we'll concede that try and then they'll put the next one dead. And it's like, oh yeah, you remembered you could do that. But in that instance, that kick through, we had three or four players who touched that ball, three of them, I think, before the Tigers scored. And not one of them just thought, I'll dive on this. All of them tried to beat the piss out of it.
Yeah.
They didn't just try to put it dead. They tried, like, Tessie's missed it. But, and I forgive him again out of this because he wasn't the one who fucked up at first. But he's missed it trying to kick it into the back of the grandstand. Yeah. Whereas all you have to do, mate, is grab it and run dead or just tap it a little or fall on it. But they can't just do the most basic thing. They
when the ball's a foot off the ground, don't try and kick it.
Yeah.
That's tough to do.
It is. Like, I mean, even if he contacted with a mate, very likely goes off his shin and just stays in field.
Exactly. Like, unless you can get a proper strike on it, you should be using your whole entire body to try and get in front of that ball.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if you think you might be able to shepherd it dead or anything like that. Like, we've seen Jermaine do it where Dufty burnt him. Like, no, and it's not just him. Like, so many teams have been burnt by thinking they can just shepherd it dead. Like, what's the point in even possibly risking that?
Yeah, and we concede enough piss easy tries before we let ourselves do that to ourselves as well. If you get, you know,
we like, don't need that.
We don't need that. It was just that was just woeful. And what was the other one I was going to mention there? And also Jordan Rickey, like 25 minutes. Jordan Rickey is great.
Yeah,
really good last week off the bench.
He was great last week off the bench. I thought he did. I thought he had a really good game last week.
And but I think he's still learning. And whatever. But even in this one, again, when that break they had when he let Dane Laurie run through his chest. And it's like, mate, you know, you weren't gonna like
give away six again.
One. It was tackle one. Yeah. Everyone does this now, Jordan.
Yeah,
just grab him and then six again, and we don't let them go the full field.
It's not honourable to like you know to give away a set restart. Just do it. Part and parcel of the game now.
And if they penalize you, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, because the real penalty was the 6 points, mate. It wasn't the line break. And so that was just embarrassing as well. And even small things, mate, even with all this happened, we still found a way to bomb like three tries.
Yeah.
They still kept letting us in the game and we still kept bombing them.
Yeah. Too many. I think the one that Rickey blew. I think that was because Stags cut inside and he's just not, you know, I wouldn't say talented enough, but he's just not aware enough to be able to turn and throw that pass.
Yeah.
I think that's the big thing with him. Tessie blew one and I can't remember who
Gamble
else
blew one.
Gamble.
Gamble blew that one running on last and just took a hit up when like, you know, God bless him, Flegler would actually run the right line back on the inside. And just that was embarrassing. And then, we got it right. Like Katoni's first game back, everyone remembered we had Katoni Stags in our side.
Yeah.
And we threw the ball at him like 50 times and it was awesome. And this game, we forgot he existed.
Now, was he running off Croft or Gamble this game?
Gamble. But the ball just never got out there. I mean, we didn't have enough of possession anyway. We had 43% of possessions. We couldn't hold the pill.
Yeah.
But he only had 7 runs. And, you know, last week in his like, he had 10 runs in the 50 odd minutes he played, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was everywhere and he couldn't get in the ball to him.
But in saying that, defensively seems to have turned
improved
a
lot. He's physically, like, man, he is strong, man. He, like anytime they went right, that right side looked locked down.
It did. It was fantastic. And that, because they were just holding their shape, because you know why? Gamble wasn't just shooting out of the line for no reason. So it allowed Stags and Jermaine to stay a little bit wider off that play the ball. And lo and behold, a couple of times they actually shoveled people into touch. Who would have thought that that's what you could do when you hold shape?
That's it, mate. And that's one of the reasons why I respect Tyson Gamble. And I think he's a really good first drop half to have in the future, because when he comes into first grade, you know that, he's probably not going to create a lot of points for you, but he's going to put pressure on the opposition. He'll defend really well. He's not afraid of being vocal on the field.
He can kick a little bit too.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, I thought he did his job for 95% of the game. Like, he's not the reason we're losing.
No.
Let's put it that way. Like, he's not the reason we're losing. There's guys like Glenn, Croft, Jermaine, you know, Flegler. They're guys that we're losing because of those guys not being able to just do their job properly.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about this game, but we'll get on to the players after that. But I will actually, we'll give credit to one other player too. Despite his defense getting ruined, I thought Corey Oates was awesome.
No, he was fantastic. He was great. Like, and it sucks that he's been sort of, he got dropped when he shouldn't have.
Because he got burnt by Jason Saab and Tommy Turbo.
I mean, who hasn't been burnt though, those two this year? I mean, they've scored a 5,500 tries each. So, but no, he was great. He attacked every bomb. I think he came down with every single one of them.
Yeah.
Made plenty of meters.
They peppered him all day.
Yeah. And the thing about Corey is he doesn't do what Jermaine does. Like he'll go up for every contest. And if he drops it, he drops it. But I'd rather someone go up for every contest and drop it rather than letting someone out jump you and just have a try.
Yeah, no, that's it. Like the Mount Milo out jumping. Mount Milo had a disgusting game till like 15 minutes to go. He was not interested in that.
Oh, he didn't want to play.
And all, he said, all Jermaine has to do is like, even if he doesn't even try and catch a thing, jump and look up. And at least at that point, he's in the way, you know?
And you look at obviously Coates, he didn't play, but you watch him for Queensland. He contested every kick that went his way. He and didn't come down with one of them in attack, but attack the ball. Like you're taught that when you're 6 years old.
Yeah, and as you said, attack Corey sometimes gets embarrassed by when he goes up for kicks and like lands on someone else. But it's because he went up for the kick. That's his job to go up for it.
You're a winger or a fullback, you attack the ball.
You do, mate. And I think Tessie's got quite good at that already too on an occasion. Like, and he's been a bit better sweeping. But I'm not sure. I know they're persisting with Jermaine over Coates, whatever. I'm not sure what his future is at this club.
Is that Tessie or Jermaine?
Jermaine, because
I can't really see him doing too much other than this year, really.
The Tigers won't be interested in him now, I don't think, considering they have Nofaluma, Mau Marlo, and they have Dan Laurie at fullback. But he was let to talk to other clubs, and I've liked the guy for a long time, but I would not lose one wink of sleep if he was scored next year. And if he goes great next, at a better club?
Look, yeah, kudos to him, but it's a little bit like Milford at the moment. He just, he might need a change of scenery. Like I said, he's an athletic freak. He's got everything that you want in a footy player.
Yeah.
But you can't be 25 and losing confidence after one mistake. You just can't.
You can't. Exactly right, mate. Like, you've got to have as short memories as any good player in a key position. And Jermaine is in a position, no matter where he plays, where he will be under pressure. 30-odd% of the game.
Wingers are key position now. Think of the work that they have to do. They've got to finish tries. They've got to defuse kicks. They've got to make meters. It is a key position. It's not just like, you know, it's different from Steve Turner's and Anthony Quinn's of, 10, 15 years ago. You are expected to do more, and he's got the skill set for it. So, you've got to have a short memory. It's like, onto the next playmate. Sorry, did I drop that last one? Can't remember.
Yeah, that's it. But instead, it's like, it's almost like he goes, did I screw up? Fuck, I've already screwed up. That's it. Yeah. Pack it in.
My family hates me. Like, I'm embarrassed. Everyone thinks I'm a loser. Like, that's not the mindset you got to have. Like, I mean, if you make a mistake, you've got to act like you haven't made one.
100%, man. And what's killing me as well is that they probably turn up against Penrith this weekend.
Absolutely, they will. And lose by 10.
Yeah, they'll probably turn up and look like a great team again and lose by 10 points. And I don't know. I have not got the answers to that. I really don't, to mentally solve some of those players there. I don't. But it just makes you pull your hair out when you watch it, mate. And as you said, I should at least, when my team's bad, I'd like to think I can look forward to the games where I think we can smash someone's shit.
Yeah, for sure.
We can't do that.
Like, we're below the Tigers on the ladder. And, as much as I look at it like, we should absolutely beat the Tigers. We're shit.
Yeah. But they don't want to play. They don't want to play, mate.
They've offered less in the last 6 to 8 weeks than what we have. Oh, God, it's fucked.
It is. Anyway, we'll move on to the next topic. Speaking of players leaving, we all knew this one was coming for a long time now. I've spoken about plenty, but I'll ask Ben, what do you feel about the final goodbye for Tevita Pangai Jr.?
It's a bizarre one. Obviously I was ready for him to leave at the end of the year. Obviously now doesn't make sense because we've got, 6 or 8 games left and he will be back in 2 weeks' time after suspension to, obviously help us win a couple more games. But he's obviously made the decision that he doesn't want to stick around to maybe win another spoon. He'd rather go somewhere and try and win something. And the club has obviously said, that's fine. I mean, whether that's on Eichen or Walters or both, I'm not too sure. But the timing of it is obviously weird, but I mean, I just don't care, really.
Neither.
I mean, I'd rather him in our team for the last 6 weeks, but if he wants to go and play with Penrith,
yeah,
you know, that's fine. I couldn't care less at the moment. I mean, I couldn't care less about how we're going it this year. Like, we've, you know, we expected improvement and that sort of thing. And it's come in patches.
Mm.
It's a better team than last year, yes, but Pangai, you know, let him go. It sucks, but it's also probably the move. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I've been his biggest fan for a number of years. Everybody knows this, and I'm totally fine with the divorce. I never thought he was a career Broncos player. Really, you know, everyone says they want to stay at a club for their life. They always say that, but we've had our fair run with him.
That's going to pay him. Like, that's
Our fair run with him. He's gone and got paid somehow, what he's got paid after. Like, someone paying him that much a couple of years ago wouldn't have raised that many red flags for me. And I think we probably paid him similar next year. But just after his history, I'm shocked that someone's paid him that much. Good on him for going to get the bag. But I think we've shown that we can, even though he adds a lot, we can cope without him in the forwards.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, I mean, if we can, and we still haven't even seen Piakura play yet.
Mm-hmm. Who I think is going to be special, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, like, he's obviously got plenty of talent, Piakura, and Brabardi has shown plenty. And we've got Capewell coming. Like, Capewell's done more in his time in first grade than what Pangai has. If all things are equal, like, Pangai's ceiling is higher, yes, but his floor is much lower.
Yeah.
Capewell might not give you those incredible performances like, you know, Pangai against Taumalolo a couple of years ago. He might not give you that, but we've seen that even on the biggest stage at Origin that Capewell is a more than capable player, and he can create things out of nothing. He's a solid defensive player, and he's, you know, he's a very good work rate in the forwards. So, I mean, I've got no dramas if we're playing, you know, whether it's Kobe at lock or Rabadi at lock and then Capewell and Piakura on an edge. I mean, that's a very good back row for me.
Yeah, and I don't know what Capewell's on, but I do think he's on less than what Pangai's getting for the Bulldogs. And
I think he will be too.
And I'll take that. And the one good thing I've seen from Capewell as well, same things as Adam Reynolds has been saying, but he really wants to own things at the club. Like, he's talking about how he wants to come and bring what he's learned, and he's, you know, named people by name. He named, like, what I've learned from Paul Gallen, Luke Lewis, Wade Graham, what I've learned at Penrith, all that. I want to come to the club, but I want to be a captain and I want to turn him around. Yeah. Obviously, Reynolds is the captain next year, but it's good hearing fabric things rather than just guys saying, oh, I can't wait to play for the Broncos.
Yeah, I want to be a Bronco. So, yeah, we'll be a Bronco then. Like,
yeah,
you can be a Bronco.
Yeah.
Like, at least Cable's gone, yeah, I want to be a leader.
Yeah.
And we need him to be a leader. We need, you know, Reynolds and Capewell as a 1-2 punch as a leadership group is fantastic for us.
Yeah, with my
biggest, you know, and my biggest problem at the moment, like, Capewell is a great signing, Reynolds is a great signing. The gap between great signings and a great coach is still too big for me. Like, they might paper over some cracks next year with, you know, Reynolds. Like, Reynolds will kick us to 4 or 5 wins just off his boot and being able to apply pressure.
Hmm.
Like, Reynolds plays, we win the Cowboys game. Reynolds play, we win the Tigers game. Reynolds plays, we win probably another one of the games against whether it was Parra or Penrith. Like, just because he can create pressure with his boot, kicking to corners, allowing kick chase to get down and all that sort of thing. Like, Reynolds will do that for us next year without any sort of coaching.
Yeah.
My biggest fear for next year is that's going to keep maybe Kevin a job longer than he probably you know, yeah. Like, I understand what the club wanted to do by bringing in Walters and having him as an old boy, as a former, you know, premiership winner and all that sort of thing to get a lot of the public back on side and a lot of the sponsors on side. But this club badly needs a coach that's going to have, you know, some proper tactical nous to him to be able to get us, you know, we might sneak into the 8 next year if all players stay fit and we get maybe another 1 or 2 signings in the offseason. We might sneak into the 8, but we're a long way from being top 4 at the moment, and only a coach is going to change that.
100%, mate. And I do think, like, we've added up now all the guys we've got rid of the last year or two. I have no idea where the money's gone. Like, I don't believe there's no cap space. Again, they just tried to sign Gagai. There must be cap space everywhere, because I know it doesn't always work like this. Lots of fans will go, oh, that guy left, that means that team has $1 million in cap space. Doesn't always work like that, because the team usually has already filled it. But we've lost, like, how many $1 million or near players? You know, Bird, Boyd, Milford, off contract from next
Lodge,
year.
Lodge, Pangai.
We've got Lodge, Pangai, Joe O, Jimmy the Jet a couple of years ago, probably not relevant anymore. Whatever, there's heaps of them. And we've not really... I know we've re-signed young fellas and signed Adam Reynolds.
Yeah.
But we've not really made a massive splash.
Obviously, the difference as well is, like, we're probably going to be paying freight on half of those contracts for next year. So, yeah, like,
I think
we might have
all of them, but Lodge, and I think maybe Pangai.
Yeah. So, like, if we got rid of, let's just say, $1.8 million, we might only have $1 million of that to spend rather than 1.8. But, again, there should be space in the cap for us to actually... You know, and whether, this could be Eichen being a bit smarter with money, like, we don't want to go after someone when there's no one out there. Like, don't sign someone just because we have cap space. Like, even though we have
with a few
Pereira, Jensen, Meade, Kelly, Gamble, all of those guys. Like, there's too many depth signings, not enough first grade signings.
I agree.
Hopefully we can actually use some of that. You know, like I said, whether it's, from November 1, maybe they're holding off until then where they can actually start chatting to some more players I'm holding out hope for that, that we can actually be smartly run. Eichen does seem like he's fairly smart, fairly switched on. Maybe he's just trying to bide some time until that deadline. So, I expect one, possibly two, I wouldn't say marquee signings, but signings that are some sort of, relevance to the actual first grade starting side.
That's it. No, and other guys, I remembered them. We didn't we had 800K for the feeder. That went, I don't know where. He went to the Titans. And then McCulloch got let go too. So all this money was created from somewhere. And maybe they front-loaded heaps of deals, which would be smart. But what I do like about some of these releases, at least looks like finally we're understanding where we need to put the money. Like, we need to keep paying. We've got Reynolds, light up on a few key guys, and then whatever.
And you know what? I think Capewell is a key signing.
So do I.
Because he's already got experience. He's already got, state of origin experience. He's not just an origin player like Sua played last year because we were out of people to actually play. Capewell looks like he's going to be a long-term starter for Queensland for the next sort of 3 to 5 years. Payne, they're going to obviously throw the bank at, which I'm fine with. He's obviously a generational talent. Like, he's someone that we should never have to lose.
Yeah.
Obviously you'd give him the $10 million over David Fifita every day of the week because of what Payne actually brings to the side week in, week out.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But yeah, so like there is a few key signings already that we've made. Like I said, Payne is a big one that we have to keep. Reynolds is a key signing. Capewell's a key signing. But our next one has to be 1 or 9. I mean, I think the key signing is the coach, but
yeah,
we have to find a 1 or a 9.
We need a 9 bad for mine. Like, I know one, we need 2. And the other weird thing, I listened to a Tony Staggs interview yesterday. He's like, his interview post training. And he doesn't, and maybe he's being coy, but I don't actually think he's kind of nervous in front of the media. So I don't think he has the ability to be coy.
Yeah.
And he was nervous in his interview, but he doesn't seem fully locked on that he's the 6 next year.
Which I'm okay with. I'd love him as a center. And you know what? If we've paid him overs a little bit to play center, there's not that many good centers in the game. And he is a genuine
game breaker
that will actually break a game wide open.
Yeah, I'm okay with paying him overs, especially like if we got money now and say he was on 750 average, just give him the 100K from Pangai, give him the money from Deed and whatever, just throw that in there. And then all of a sudden it's like 500K each year and you're sweet.
Yeah.
Whatever. But he didn't seem fully locked on that he was going to be 6. He was like, I'll give it a crack if they want me to, but and he's like, I'll play wherever they want me to, I'll play there. But I'm a center, is what he said. I'm a center. And it's like, maybe he's not locked in. So maybe there's still an option of a 6 from someone we don't know either.
So you're saying that Munster to the Broncos is happening?
I was about to say, there is November's coming up and we have the opportunity now, knowing we know that, knowing Brisbane 2 may not happen. There's like Ponga, there's Munster, there's
Harry Munster Grant, and Brandon Cheese. Smith. Yeah, I mean, I love Harry Grant, don't get me wrong, but give me Munster and Brandon Smith.
I'm just cheering.
Every fucking day of the week. I will absolutely take both of those guys. And Munster is obviously like a Queenslander. Brandon Smith has said his family's moving to Brisbane or the Gold Coast in, like, whether it's the next 12 months or they're already there. Like, that's something that that I can has to be going at, like, hard. You've got to go after a Brandon Smith. Like, if Brandon Smith is playing as a seven, I mean, as a nine, sorry, we don't need a Reynolds to be able to be a game breaker. Like, Reynolds just has to do what he does, because the creativity will come from Brandon Smith and whoever's outside of Reynolds. Like, all we need Reynolds to do is be that seven, the game manager, the kicker, and all that sort of thing. Like, keep a calm head on everyone. That's perfect. If we can get a Brandon Smith, or, you know, whether it's a Brandon Smith or a Cameron Munster, we need one of those two, I think, or a player of similar ilk to 100%. Be taking one of those positions.
So that's what I'm hoping for. And that's why I'm happy they dodged Sewell. I don't think they even offered Sewell anything in the end. I think Sewell wanted to come back 100 times. Yeah. They didn't do that, which is great. But they also dodged Dane Gagai. And
Dane didn't really want to come back. Like,
no, he didn't. He pretty much said he didn't want to come back.
Yeah, it was his third option. Like, so I think that was getting blown out. Obviously, probably because he's a Queenslander as well, and he started his career here. And, you know, the only people that'll fix the Broncos are apparently ex-Broncos.
Even though it hasn't ever, like, worked.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand where that narrative comes from. Like, it seems like a really weird stretch. But, so Gagai's off to the Knights, and then Sewer obviously off to the Dragons. So, you know, that's great for us. And, you know, two positions we don't need to sign players in.
Yeah, because I know people are saying with light on backs in air quotes, but, okay, we signed Brenko Lee. That happened.
Yeah.
Okay? We have already, if Sarko says whatever, he's on a wing. If he doesn't, like, you know, Cobbo's probably one wing. Yep. Oates is probably still the other winger. Tessie's probably the fullback next year. Herbie's one of the centers. And then the other center is either likely Katoni,
yeah,
Brenko, or Jesse Arthurs.
Yeah.
They have depth. They still have, they signed Mead and they signed Pereira. I don't love that we signed both of them, but those are things that happened. Yeah. They have those players. We don't need Dane Gagai.
No, absolutely. Gagai's the last thing we need. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was cool we dodged that. And hopefully we can narrow our focus into another spine player.
Yeah.
No matter what spine player it is, we need another spine player so bad.
Yeah. We just need someone with some creativity as well. Like, it's like, you know, someone that can actually give our outside guys who have got talent, like Herbie. We need to get Herbie some ball where he can actually be in some open space. Like, we've seen his footwork is great. We obviously know what Katoni can do. We've seen, like, glimpses of what Tessie can offer only in, you know, five or six games. Like, these guys are playing out wide. We need a seven and a six or a nine or whatever it's going to be. We need them to be able to play in the middle of field and get a little bit wider so they can get these guys that ball. Like, we've seen Herbie being close to breaking a number of games open. If he has a little bit more time with the ball due to some creativity in the middle of the field, we're going to be in a much better position than what we are now, like, than just giving him the ball and saying, can you please try and break a few tackles?
Yeah,
like, that's all we seem to be doing at the moment. Our six and our seven don't give our wider guys any space or any sort of shape to be able to run off. And that's it just kills us.
And if Stags is the six next year, we can make do with a right edge. It's either Brenko or Arthurs, who looks to be on the precipice of a 2-year deal. Arthurs has actually been okay this year. That was
I think Arthurs has been fine. Like, I've got no dramas playing Arthurs. Like, center's not a strong spot across the competition.
It's not.
And I would say Arthurs is the mead. Like, he's the mean. He's the average. He's not shocking. He's not amazing. He's got some talent about him for sure. Like, he's got good feet. He scored a great try last week, where he got on the outside of someone and managed to ground the ball in the corner. Like, he can do a job as a center if you've got a good half or 5-8 inside him.
Yeah, 100%, mate. And that's it. Like, I wouldn't be against if we went and signed a game-breaking back. But I don't think Gagai's that. Gagai's 31 next year. His best years are behind him. He's living off a Origin reputation that was never the same at club level.
Gagai has never been a game-breaking anything.
No.
Like, Gagai's performances on the wing for Queensland are fantastic. He's the Brent Tate of the modern, you know, Queensland side. Plays unbelievably well at Origin, but doesn't, like, necessarily break it open.
Yeah.
Like, you never said Tate broke it open. Yes, Tate scored some long-range tries, but that's not breaking it open. The guys inside did that. Like, Thurston set up Tate, and Gagai would take an intercept. But, like, Gagai's never broken a game open off his own attacking back in the NRL.
Like, ever.
No, that's not a slight on him, but he's just not that type of centre.
He's not. So that's, we didn't need that guy. And
Hodges was a game-breaking centre.
He was. He was. And yeah, I just don't think we need that type of signing. We need to look for a key position players. And the other little thing you mentioned it there that's worried me a little is, in a vacuum, a lot of these depth signings on their own individually, they are fine signings.
Yes.
You start adding them up and it's like, are we really feeling out the end of our roster with like proven mediocrity?
Yeah, and like, I said this, I think, whether it was in Discord or something like that, but like, Corey Jensen isn't someone that you develop.
He's 28 next year, by the way. That'll shock some people.
Yeah, he's played for the Cowboys for 5 or 6 years without doing anything. He's not a development player. That's like, Nico Hines was a development player for the Storm because they got him when he had no experience in first grade. They sent him to, you know, Q Cup, playing for the Falcons for a couple of years. They developed him as a fullback. And now look at him. Mm-hmm. That's development. Corey Jensen comes off the back of playing 8 years for the Cowboys. He's already reached his ceiling.
Yeah, that's
like,
it. And
there's nothing more we can do for him. Like, we're not going to make Jensen the next kick out. It's not. Just not going to happen. Like, we are, there's no need to sign Jensen.
There isn't. And like, we're missing. So Pat Carrigan, whether I like him or not, will play in the first grade side next year. He'll be in that 13. Yeah,
for sure he will.
And you end up having guys like Ethan Bullmore still can't make the side, right?
Which is ridiculous.
It is. He's better than Jensen. Jensen is like another Reece Kennedy. We already have a Reece Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know? And Reece Kennedy does his job well. I
think Reece Kennedy is better than Jensen, though.
So do I. Like, we don't need that. And it's the same thing when we signed both Meade and Pereira. It's like, we need one Meade or Pereira, you know? And if, I don't know if they've penned Kelly yet, but they've got Gamble now. We don't need an Albert Kelly.
No, we don't.
They're both of the same thing. And almost all those guys, the worst thing about all of that is almost all of them are available next February. You know, they're still there. Yeah. And we've signed them for 2 years, so none of them to 1 year fill a gap deal.
And it's like, why are we spending $800,000 or more possibly of our cap on guys that, I like that.
They are what they are. Like, and you mentioned, it's funny because you touched on what I was going to touch on, is that you can make those type of signings and have upside. And the ones you mentioned, like Nico Hines is one of them. Another one would be, say, I know people wouldn't think it is now, but Felice Kaufusi was a Queensland Cup player when they got
him. Yeah, he was.
Felice was one. You know, Christian Welch they developed. Tui Kamakamitha they developed. These are guys who were cheap, that had upside and weren't that young, and they worked on them. And even look at like Parramatta, Isaiah Papali'i last year. Nobody wanted him, got him cheap. He's cracked in their side. Like, why aren't we looking for the next Nico Hines, the next Papali'i, the next of those lots, rather than guys who just know, like, okay, we know who these guys are. We're not, we know
that. Let's look for guys who've got maybe 5 or 10 games of first grade under their belt, not 80 or 90.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, we said this, I was having this chat, not in Discord, another group yesterday, and some of the guys are focusing too much on the players. I was saying, like, oh, we'll get the next Papali'i. I'm not trying to get exactly Papali'i, but I mentioned, like, what about a guy like Renoff Atoni down at the Bulldogs? You know, they don't want him for some reason. He is a little older, but he's looked really good this year. And then Roosters. That afternoon, he was at the Roosters. It's like, oh, 150 a year for a guy like him. Who would I rather pay 150 a year, him or Corey Jensen? Not a hard choice.
Yeah, exactly right.
And we just haven't done any of that. And again, I was fine with all of them on their own. You're like, oh, it's an okay signing.
Yeah.
But you stack them all up. You're like, geez, that's a lot of guys filling up roster spots that you could probably get off the street next
February.
Well,
that's what I mean. Like you said, if we needed to fill a roster spot come March 1 next year, you sign Corey Jensen.
Yeah.
You don't sign him, you know, in July of the year beforehand. Like, what are you doing? Yeah.
Jordan Pereira as well.
It just doesn't make any sense. And like, I think I said it to you, like, we're fast becoming the Titans with these sort of signings. Like, we don't need to sign every, like, it's like we've looked at him and he's got, oh shit, you don't have a club for next year. Look at his puppy dog eyes. Oh, let's give him 2 years. Like,
yeah,
we don't, the Broncos of yesteryear, and you know, I know we're not the Broncos of yesteryear. Like, that's like Kevy seems to try to drill into him. Like, you're the Broncos, but like, our depth signings are usually starting at most other clubs. Like, that's how good our depth was as a as a club, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And now we're just signing every single straggler that hasn't got a club for next year, because why not?
Yeah, and there's definitely guys with potential we could do that with. We're not doing, we haven't done that. And yeah, and you look at guys like Jordan Pereira, again, old, 29 next year, given 2 years, like Jensen. It's just confusing. Like, okay, when Branko got to the Storm, right, he didn't get an NRL deal, mate.
Yeah.
Like, he did, like, and I'm not saying Branko is that bad. I thought Branko was worth someone figuring out. They did that. Again, why aren't we looking for that type of signing over giving someone guarantee? Like, we guaranteed security for guys that might be out of the league. Like, if we didn't sign Corey Jensen, he might not have got signed by anyone. He might have been in Queensland Cup next year.
Like, do you reckon Corey Jensen plays for us next year?
I don't know. He's taken Asiata's spot. I think he I don't think he works his way into first grade. If he plays first grade, it's because there's been a lot of injuries. That's what I believe.
I reckon too.
Like, it had to be a number of them. And then he'll be there the year after and we'll look at the roster and go, geez, what have...
Yeah.
You know?
We're like, oh, Corey Jensen's a thing.
Yeah.
We've paid him how much money for 2 years? Like...
Yeah. So whilst I applaud them being ready to let guys go, like Pangai and Lodges, similar finally, because we do have, in the end, we do have a catchment. There's still always the next man up at Brisbane. They're always there. Like, we still have in the young forwards that you have, like Xavier Willison, Brendan Piacura, the Va'a brothers, there's a whole bunch of them. But it's just frustrating that we do have these glaring holes that we're not filling, and then we're filling other holes with these types of signings. It's like, you just hope that there has to be something coming in November. There's just no way there isn't. It just can't not be anything for Brisbane from here.
That's it, man. That's the scary part, and also hopefully the exciting part is, like, there has to be something coming. Like, this can't be it.
Mm.
Like, no club can be this poorly run. Like, we've sacked not everyone in the front office, but, like, we've done a pretty big clean out. We've actually got some people in there that are looking to do the right thing by the club. You can't do all of the hard work with Lodges, Pangais, and all that sort of stuff by getting rid of those deals only to come back with something that, like, I'd rather keep all of those guys than the guys we're signing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like, we're getting rid of Asiata. I was like, well, he hasn't been the signing I'd hoped, but I'd rather have him than Corey Jensen.
Yeah. And but Asiata hasn't been the signing we hoped because he wasn't given the opportunity to be that guy.
He wasn't. And like, I do also think they're still looking at a Ryan James, I believe. So, again, that just pushes the guys like Jensen down the depth chart. And you're like, why?
Yeah.
And I get the James signing. Again, I do actually understand that one if it happens, but it's...
It's like our spots from 20 to 30 are one player.
Yeah.
Like, we've got the top 20 is not too bad when you look at it. And then 20 to 30, you're like, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Yeah. And if you want to talk about, like, I'll give some actual examples of guys who are off contract with talent or not. Like, for example, doesn't sound flashy, but Tremaine Spry is a Titans junior, was in that really good Queensland side, is carrying a little bit of timber, but every time he plays Queensland Cup, he kills it. Every time. And he's got 8 tries in 8 games this season. Put a show on. I watched him last week against Sunshine Coast Falcons, whatever. That's a guy you can give a deal to for 100K a year. And you're not thinking he's playing first grade.
Yeah. You're not going, oh, geez, I've got that much money sitting in Cup right now.
Yeah, but you've got a dude that you're thinking, like, if Tremaine Spry ticks the boxes, we hope he can, he's going to be our starting center in 8 weeks or whatever. But instead we've like got Jordan Pereira, who's like, well, if our best center winger gets injured and then Meade gets injured, Pereira won't let us down for a week.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the upside of that signing, is it? Like, just things that, and again, one of those guys is cool. One Tyson Gamble is cool.
Yeah.
But you want a Tyson Gamble. And there's like, even we have one. We have an Ezra Mam, you know, who plays for South Logan. Scares me how much he runs like Milford. But like, you want him and a talented dude. You know, you don't just want the one shit guy.
Well, at the moment, we've got Kelly, Gamble, and Croft.
Yeah.
And so far, and 2021 Milford. Like,
yeah.
That's an absolute clusterfuck of bad halves right now. So
it is, mate. So. I just hope that the guys we spoke about, they're looking at them. And I do think there'll be some bias towards like a Munster or a Ponga or a similar because they do want Queenslanders.
Yeah.
And as dumb as it sounds, it does kind of matter. Like,
I think it does too. Like, I think it gives the club its identity. It's like, we're the flagship Queensland club. Like, mm-hmm. you do want your side to be made up of majority Queenslanders. It's the team that the town gets behind you more that way. They've got more people to cheer for. Like, it just breeds well for the rest of the, you know, the season, the competition we need. I think need is not the right word, but Queenslanders just suit the Broncos.
Yeah. They do. Oh, another example too. Like, I'm just thinking from my head. Isaac Lumi at the Storm off contract.
Yeah.
I'd have him than Mead and Pereira. But
oh, get him for sure.
But we're not.
At least we know we can catch the highball.
I do like one thing though. Like, Dale Finucane, right? That's not happening. We've heard it's not happening for us. And I don't think we kind of need him at the moment anyway. It's one before Capewell, I would have loved Finucane. Yeah. One thing that the rumors with him that's filled me with faith is that for some reason, the Titans and Cowboys want him.
Yeah.
And if I was to list out the NRL clubs that need Dale Finucane the most, yeah, they are not. The they are like down the bottom with like the Roosters.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They're there because like the Cowboys have them and the Titans have good packs.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
The Titans have Jason. I mean, the Cowboys have Taumalolo.
Yeah.
And then they've got like their forward pack is not too bad. The Titans, again, they've got a decent forward pack.
So I'm glad they're doing that. One, like, it seems like they're duking it out.
And but this is where the experience card gets played, because it just can't. Like, what makes you think that Dale Finucane is going to turn the Titans into a team that doesn't just concede 40 points and a half because they couldn't give a shit?
Is he going to make their hooker 7 and 6 better?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't get my head around them doing that because they have, as we know, they have Tino, they have Fifita, they have Mofo, three really good young forwards. So they've got them. Jared Wallace is still there next year. I think Proctor's not an option. I don't think they'll sign him. But
Jolliffe is still there as well.
Jolliffe is still there. They got Bo Firma signed to 2024. They just signed Isaac Liu.
Yeah.
Why the hell are they even picking the phone up with Dale's agent calls?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
So I'm glad we're not doing that kind of stuff. We're not full-time yet. Because they need a hooker probably more than we do. And
they need a hooker. Yeah, I mean, their hooker is... It's dreadful, that situation. Yeah,
it is.
And obviously, Ash Taylor's not going to be there next year either, so...
Yeah. What do you think, by the way, about, like, would you sign Ash back on... Like, so a rumor I've heard is clubs are turning him down at 300K a year.
Yeah.
Would you take Ash at the Broncos on 200?
Not now, because we've got Kelly Gamble. Yeah. Like, well,
has Kelly been confirmed he's staying?
Well, I mean, if I put it this way, if Kelly went, I'd take Ash at 200K. Mm. Because for me, Ash plays ahead of Gamble.
Yeah, I would do it as well, but not rely on him. That's what I'm sitting to. I think it's starting to hit that point where he's almost too cheap for the talent that's there.
Yeah.
And
like, you know, he's had some decent games this year. He's been far less offensive than Croft and Milford when they've played.
100%.
Like, far less offensive. And he's got a good kicking game still. And if he's a guy that, you know, and I think the big difference here is, like, if we got Ash for that cheap and we didn't sign Kelly, Ash could actually play more of a role than he might think outside of a Reynolds, because Fogarty doesn't offer what Reynolds does.
He doesn't.
Far less. And Ash playing outside of Reynolds, Ash can be even less, you know, there's going to be no pressure on him whatsoever to do what he needs to do outside of Reynolds, because Reynolds is going to control the game for 70% of it.
Yeah, that's like the really good fit, I think, that's down at Newcastle, Clifford and Pierce. And like, I don't rate Pierce, but Pierce is going to have the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
He is going to be ball dominant. And it lets another half that I call like a social loafer. Like, guys like Clifford and Ash Taylor don't mind cruising through 30 minutes of a game sometimes.
Yeah.
But when you have someone else who's ball dominant, they can get away with that and not embarrass you. And then when they pipe up, like when Clifford turns up, all of a sudden puts in 2 or 3 good bombs in a row and then, you know, puts a nice kick in for a try, you're like, fuck, how good's Jake Clifford?
Especially with a Ponga as well. Like,
yeah,
that's the beauty of having Clifford in that scenario is like you got dominant Pierce, and then probably next dominant is going to be Ponga. So yeah. Clifford is essentially your third dominant playmaker there. And that's, you know, if Ash does that, then I'd be okay with that, because I think it looks like Tessie's going to get, you know, his shot at the fullback spot for next year, unless they decide to go after somebody, you know, in the off season. And he's, like I said, he's done a very admirable job so far. And I think he'll only get better with another preseason there and, you know, some decent coaching. So yeah, I mean, if he can do his job and Reynolds does his, like I said, it all depends on us getting a nine. I think that nine's probably the most crucial spot for us.
I agree. Especially when we've got such a pack of like dominant players, like you want to send this team around a bit better than they have been.
Well, I mean, we watching, I think it was the Tigers game. I said to you, like there was a point in that game where Turpin took off like he was going to try and do something. And it was like he was running in quicksand. I mean, it just completely killed four tackles of good work that we'd done leading up to it. And any other hooker, almost any other hooker, except for probably the Titans hooker, actually takes advantage of that situation. He got an offload off the back of it, but it still just absolutely set us back three tackles.
Well, that's why I'm hoping to see some Corey Pakes in the run in, because I know they've got some issues with Corey that, like, he defensively, he's one of those guys that ends up on his back more often than he puts his opposition on their back.
Yeah.
Which isn't fantastic for a guy who's defend in the middle the whole game, but Corey's got a bit of attacking spark about him, a bit more than Turpin. I just want to see what he can do around there. And he's now 21. Because I think we lost that year of development last year, I think a lot of us are thinking about these young players like they're still 19. They were 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like Corey's been around enough now, maybe it's time to get a bit of a run in first grade. So I'm hoping to run home and get a bit of a chance.
I think he was actually good the time that he played for us a bit last year. Like when I say good, he was, you know, he offered something at least. It didn't look like he was ever out of his depth or anything like that. I'd be more than happy to give him a 14 jersey just to see what we got for 20, 30 minutes a game on the run in. Like we don't have to play Turpin for 80 minutes. Like he probably is not fit enough, but like, we just don't need him out there for 80 minutes.
Yep. And you go, mate.
No, that's about what I was saying. Like, I think we can afford to have a spot on the bench for someone who's going to come on and play, you know, 20, 30 minutes out of the nine position.
I agree. And I want to ask you about two more players before we wrap it up, because I know people are going to start asking us about one of these guys, but Joseph Manu this week has come out talking about eyeing up playing fullback or similar. And because we have money, we're going to get linked to him. What do you think about the potential signing of Joseph Manu? And it's most likely to be for 2023 as well, because he's still on contract next year. Are you pro signing Manu, or is he's down your priority list?
I wouldn't say he's down on my priority list. I rate Manu very highly. I think he could. I think if we're to sign Joey Manu, we sign Joey Manu without a position just yet.
Yeah.
He can play one or he can play six. Like he's shown that he can play six. But I think he's a very, very good fullback as well. I think we've seen in the time that Tedesco's been out that he's slotted in there very nicely. And then if he wants, like I said, if he wants to play, he can essentially play three spots in that back line with six center and one. So, I mean, if he was someone that you could get, I don't think he's going to be breaking the bank money-wise either, because people just don't seem to rate him as much because of the Tedescos and that sort of thing in that team. Like Sam Walker's getting far more plaudits than what Joey Manu does. And Joey Manu does far more for that team than what Sam Walker does. I think he'd be a good signing for 2023 if you know, the links are there and we decided to go after him. I wouldn't be upset if we signed him at all.
I'm with you there. I think we've got to start talking to good players, obviously, in November. Yeah. He ticks that box, and I don't think he's going to get that ridiculous overpay bump of he's an Origin player, pay him 200K more than you would normally play him, or all this other kind of stuff. I think you might be able to get him for 750 to 800, maybe around there, and be pretty happy with it. And here's one that I want us to go after. And I only realized like 2 weeks ago that he's off contract in next year. Hamiso Tabuai-Fidow is off contract in 2022. The Cowboys have pretty much spent up on key positions. They've got like a million in Val. They've paid Drinkwater. They've paid Townsend. They've paid Tamalolo. They've paid Reece Robson.
And they've even paid a little bit of Tom Dearden.
Yeah, they have. I think he is gettable if a club wants him. And I think, again, I'd rather have a Munster or a Manu for our fullback. I think he's in that conversation. No, sorry, not for Ponga or a Manu for fullback. I think he's in that conversation that we should be talking to him and seeing if he wants to come play fullback for Brisbane as well.
Absolutely. You've got to at least speak to him. Like, he's only 19. Like, he's only going to get better. I mean, we saw what he did the other day. He breaks tackles for fun, and he's very, very smooth when he runs. And just with a little bit of polish, he could be, I'm not saying he could be a top three fullback in the game or anything like that, but he's just someone that he's got speed. He's got something that, you know, we could use as a team, you know, him playing a little bit out the back of shape, playing through the middle off of, you know, we've seen Haas now start to offload a little bit more in ball play. Like, if he can play through the middle, and he does sniff around the middle a lot, like, his support player is already there. He's fantastic. Like, he'd already be in the top, you know, 10 sort of support players in the game. And when you're as fast as he is, that's all you have to do. You don't even have to offer anything super special. And, you know, him just floating around the middle, you've got guys like Kate Well and Haas that can offload. I mean, he's got to be someone that you'd at least send an inquiry to, I think.
Same. And exactly right. And I think the game, with the way the rules have changed, are a little less reliant on ball-playing fullbacks. Whilst you still have to be able to ball play, it's a bit more of that. You want a guy supporting through the middle and playing up the guts.
Well, that's where Tedesco makes his money. Yeah. Like, Tedesco is not your Tommy Turbo-style ball-playing fullback. Tedesco is a bit more of a throwback to someone whose main game is support play, and they will ball play off the back of that a little bit as well. Like, that's what the Hammer can do for me. He can support play first, ball play second. You know, that's where his strength lies.
Yep. And he also kept Reece Walsh out of the Queensland 18 2 years ago at fullback. He is a fullback by first choice. We're just trying to move someone there.
Yeah.
He has been a fullback through. The Cowboys are trying to get him into the side elsewhere. So
you can just see, though, the way he plays. Like, and you know, that even that try scored in Origin, he put himself where a fullback would be from center.
He did. Like, he did,
that's,
mate.
That's just exactly where he needed to be. He saw the line break coming from the right-hand side, and he was on the left. And as soon as that went through, he pushed straight up through the middle. And like I said, that's what good fullbacks do.
And we have support play. We haven't had that at the club for, what,
three years?
Yeah, 3 years.
Like, Darius gave up years ago. I mean, not that Darius was ever a huge support guy, but, like, I think Ben Hunt was probably our last real good support sort of guy.
Yeah, agreed. Ben Hunt, really good support player. And then I think Tessie's tried to do it a bit more than Jermaine has, but again, he's still learning there.
He is.
And I'm not giving up on Tessie, but I do think that he could probably, I haven't given up on him being a center either.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you can sign a Ponga, a Manu, a Tabuai Fidao, you're taking them over Tessie.
Absolutely you are. And that's not a slight on Tessie. That's just, there's better players. And Tessie is not without his spot in the Broncos team in future, I don't think. Like, he's shown quite a fair bit in his short stints that he's got what it takes to actually win a game for us. So, he's doing a good job, I think, for now.
He is. Anyway, I think that's enough Broncos therapy, and it's probably been long enough. Is there anything you want to get off your chest before we wrap it up?
No, not really. I mean, like I said, this was a tough game to swallow, that Tigers game, and it really made me question. Like I said, the biggest question marks for me of the club, other than what we spoke about, they've got to have a plan on who they want their next coach to be. I think that's going to be the most important signing that we make in the next, you know, however many years. They've got to pick a coach. They've got to go after him hard. And that's going to be the biggest key decision I think they make in the next however many years.
Yeah, I think the tough thing for me too is I actually don't know who that guy is myself.
Me neither. I've been looking everywhere. I'm like, I mean, you're not going to pry Robbo away from the Roosters, I don't think. Bellamy's done after the Storm. Like, it's just, you know, it's obviously we had Demetriou here, but he's obviously going to start his Rabbitohs career next year. Like, it's tough. It's a pretty sort of thin coaching field at the moment. I don't know who they're going to get, but they need to make sure that whoever they do get next is, it better not be fucking Paul Green.
I better say, yeah, mate. And I'm a bit worried because he's Eichens, mate. But I don't know how many times Paul Green has to prove that the game has passed him by.
Yeah. And, I don't think, I mean, surely I can smart enough to realize what's happened with the Cowboys over the last 5 years and also what happened with Queensland this year, that maybe he's not the guy to throw into a job like the Broncos.
Yeah, we've had about, well, when we hired Seabold, we had three main candidates and the fourth never had a shot. Like Jason Demetriou was the fourth one. They were never hiring him because of the Wayne links. But the other three were Seabold, Green and Kevy. And I might drink cyanide if we gave all three of them a shot. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Like new candidates come up, fellas. Let's look at new ones after
give
this
us
one.
Something.
Yeah.
But, you know, there could be some coaches in Q Cup. There could be some, you know, I know the women's coach has done a really good job too. Like I would not be averse to seeing, you know, him being able to put his case forward. But yeah, so there's going to be plenty of candidates that actually want to coach the Broncos, but fingers crossed we can actually choose one that's not so Paul Green.
That's it, mate. And I don't think it has to be another proven head coach. Like proven head coaches don't become available very often if they're any good. This just doesn't happen. No. So guys like, again, Bellamy was an assistant when he got hired. Trent Robertson came from overseas. Bennett was an assistant when he got Brisbane in the first place. He's been around forever. That's why he's moved around. It's very rarely a club that gets a second chance head coach. And that's like a start of his dynasty at a club.
Yeah.
So I'm just we've just done the experience guy again. I'm just done with that. I don't know who the answer is, but you know, maybe like Jason Rowell's been waiting for like 5 years. Maybe he's one of them. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as you said, it's hard to know the great coaching candidates as a fan. It just is.
Yeah.
But you'd love to, maybe there's guys like that. Maybe there's someone in Queensland Cup. I'm praying to God that it's not Paul Green.
Yeah. Yeah, like, exactly right. I mean, you know, Seraldo at the Panthers has obviously had a fair bit of chat about him. He didn't take up a job with somebody, I do believe, a couple of years ago. He decided to stay on with Penrith. But, you know, he's someone that you could definitely look at. He obviously has got a very good brain for it.
And he's still very young, by the way. He's still he's head coach already. Yeah, I don't mind that one.
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, I just think they've got to pick someone that's just not a fucking old boy.
Yeah, and Seraldo, from what I've heard, he's got the hard part down, and that's the man management.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of really good footy heads out there, but at its base, players will win games that they want to play for you. It'll just happen. Good players will win games, and Seraldo has he's been with that Penrith lot from that current model their first grade crop from like NYC in 2014. Hasn't left because of the relationship he has with the players.
Yeah.
Players like him a lot. Like, I think that if he's a good option to other clubs, if he can reproduce that linkage.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, there'll be options out there. It's just a matter of, you know, doing the due diligence and finding the right one.
Oh, it kills me the most all the time when fans say, oh, we shouldn't sack X because who else is out there?
Yeah.
So, mate, there's always more coaching candidates.
There's always more coaching candidates. And if you're not doing well, why would you want to just keep not doing well?
Yeah, no. So, I'm hoping Seraldo is actually – that's actually a good one. Seraldo's not a bad one. Maybe Rolls, but we don't know. But as you said, that has to be the other big plan.
Yeah.
If it's not Paul – I can probably pretty much get on board with anybody who isn't Paul Green.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, Flanagan's out there as well. I hate Flanagan, but
– I can get on board.
At the same time, like, he's got a proven track record of being able to do things. And I think he could ruffle a few feathers. And just, there just needs to be a change that's not what Seabold did. Like, Seabold changed to something that was just completely ludicrous. Like,
it was.
Shane Flanagan is still a footy coach at the end of the day.
Yeah, and
someone that just puts on a presentation and says, this is what you have to do. And there's no why to it. It's just do this.
And yeah, and Flano wasn't out of a gig because, like, I was like recycled coaches who get punted. He's not out of a gig because he started losing games.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, and I know all the other things happened, but yeah, I agree he's a good footy coach. And don't confuse Shane Flanagan, the terrible commentator, with Shane Flanagan, the footy coach.
Yeah.
Because they're not the same thing.
Exactly right. Yeah. Shane Flanagan as a footy coach is clearly a decent head coach.
Yeah, he is. And what I've heard is that he's pretty good again at getting on the level with players, but also found ways to like motivate guys like Andrew Fifita, for example, dealt with head cases like Fifita for years.
Yeah.
They had a relationship that was teetering on the edge that even you had Fifita calling out Flanagan during a game and it still worked.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy who can manage from what I've seen different types of people.
Well,
so
plus,
maybe
you know, you had your Josh Dugans in the side as well, and you know, Fifita, Graham Gallen, like big personalities in a team, and he managed to get them together and, you know, won a comp. So whether it was needled or not, but
and they kept winning till he wasn't allowed there. So whatever. And as you said, needling, all that stuff happened. I just want to win games. Needle them up, boys.
Just, like, make us successful again. That you've got every advantage that you could possibly want by coaching the Broncos. Like, we should be back in the top four within 2 years.
Yeah. Well, what we'll know is next time we put a coaching search out there, the candidates will come.
Yeah.
They'll always come
absolutely.
For that gig.
Yeah. They'll, like I said, there'll be no shortage of it. They'll be coming from the trees to apply for the job. So
that's it. Okay. Anyway, I think we're done. That's it.
Good.
Thanks for coming again, Benny. I appreciate it. It's always refreshing getting someone else's opinion here now, because the club just seems to be in the same spot for like 2 years. So it's always good to have you come join us.
Oh, mate, pleasure to be on. No worries.
Okay. Well, anyway, say goodbye, Benny.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.